to start with the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, help me carry your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. Just a couple things. A lot of people listen on the podcast from all over. I just wanted to let people know that I'm reorganizing the site, making it easier to use. I've relabeled all the talks. I took out the years. When we started in 17, we had three meetings, and they were three different parts of the book. And so there's a search bar under episodes. You can do any topic. You can search by the day, and you can search by step. And then at the bottom, after the last 30 episodes, there's a big tag box with a bunch of tags. I've numbered the Wednesdays from 1 to 130 or 40, whatever it is. And so you can search by day, and they're in numbered order. I like to recycle the talks. I did that during the Zoom. I couldn't record. And I'm going to keep the original number, and it doesn't matter. If you want to, any topic, anything you want to cover that I've covered, it's easy to find. Today we're on a vision for you, and I started recording for those on the listening back in what we've been doing about 8 weeks now, and we finished the family afterwards, and we're on a vision for you. I didn't do two employers this time. We are at page 154. Actually, we're on 155, but in honor of Julia Mark, I'm going to review. Because on page 154, as you read it, you can see, if you've studied the book and you understand Bill's story in chapter 1, and where he was in 1934 when alcohol was his master and quicksand surrounded him. And then Ebbie Thatcher met him, and he went in the hospital, and he worked the steps, and he had a spiritual experience. And then for 6 months, he tried to help other alcoholics. There was no AA, there was no steps. He was in the Oxford group, and he did succeed in staying sober. And his wife pointed out that although he hadn't succeeded in helping anybody, he stayed sober. And then Dr. Silkworth said, well, one of the things you might want to work on is not to preach to the alcoholics about your spiritual experience, but tell them about your experience of your powerlessness and then what happened to you and what's like now. And he's going to use all that because we're going to read about when he meets Dr. Bob today. But he goes to Akron, Ohio in 1935 in May, and he's going to wants to become a success again. Sound familiar? And he wants to be a big shot, and he's going to put together this big deal. And he said that this would have set him on his feet financially, and it seemed vitally important. So he was getting away from helping other alcoholics, seeking God, to what was vitally important for him, what he thought he needed to be okay. And that was the story of his whole life, and to some extent my life and everybody in this room. But the lawsuit bogged down, and he had hard feeling and controversy. And then in these three paragraphs here, and we didn't share enough on it, I didn't think, because you know I'm in charge of the world. But we had a nice discussions on Wednesday. But look at this tremendous description of the powerlessness of alcohol and how without God there's no hope for us. So he's bitterly discouraged. He's in a strange place. He's discredited and broke. He's only been sober a few months, no AA, no sponsorship, no one to really go to. And he wanted to talk with someone, but whom? And we missed that line last week, Stu, on Wednesday. He wanted to talk to someone, and Julie described how important it is, and Kevin, to be able to talk to someone. And he paced the lobby. He didn't know how he was going to pay his bill. So things are pretty bad. And he stood in the lobby, and at one end was the church directory. And then at the other end was an attractive bar. Now notice it didn't say a bar, it was an attractive bar. Now what makes a bar attractive? What you see in it. Mark said a bar, and he could see the gay crowd inside. They were all happy, and he's miserable in the lobby. And he said, well, there I'm gonna find companionship and release from what? You see how he's telling himself he needs to go in there and he needs a drink. Because remember, his mind knows that when he's in this place, the alcohol will fix it. It won't work, but his mind is telling him that. And he's going to guess, but he says he's not really going to get it unless he takes some drinks. He's not going to have the courage to scrape up the money. So he's already rationalizing the drinks. He needs the drink for courage. And it used to be called liquid courage, right? And he was going to have a lonely weekend. Oh, poor Bill. And you could sing the Bill self-pity song here. But of course, he's arguing with himself. And this is the power of these three paragraphs. Of course, he can't drink. But why can't he sit at the table? But he says, hopefully at the table. Hopeful for what? A bottle of ale before him. Then comes the rationalization I've heard a million times. After all, I'd been sober 6 months. So then I can go in the bar. And he says, perhaps, now here it is, he could handle, say, 3 drinks, no more. Well, he knows that's a lie. Remember, it says, the doctor says, the alcoholic cannot see the truth from the lie. And he's not seeing truth now. He's telling himself lies. And then I read, fear gripped him, but it really wasn't fear, it was God. And the fear wasn't like self-centered fear. It was fear like a rattlesnake. You put a rattlesnake in your lap, and that's a natural fear of aversion to something that you know is dangerous. And he couldn't see the truth of that without God, because right above it he says he's going to have 3 drinks, no more. And then fear gripped him, and I said God gripped him, and he was thin on ice. And then he describes the old insidious insanity, that first drink. And then he shivered, and he turned away. Now, if that's not an example, if you had studied Bill's story, and you read it, and I believe he's telling the truth of the power of God. Anybody doesn't believe in the existence of God, just read these three paragraphs. And we got a book over there, Jim, to give her. And he turned away, and the music and gay chatter floated to him from the bar. Can you think of that? He's walking away, and he hears it, but he's turned away. And remember what it says on page 84, we resolutely turn our thoughts to others we can help, away from ourselves. And then he talks about the men who might die because they didn't know how to get well. See, he was at the turning point. We read it every meeting. We stood at the turning point. And we either are going to stay where we are, or we're going to turn to God with complete abandon, it says. And then he thanked God when sanity returned. And then he went to the church directory, and according to AA folklore, I wasn't there, he went to, the last name was Reverend Thunk. And Reverend Thunk knew someone named Henrietta Cyberling of the Firestone, one of the heirs, and she was on the outs with the family, so she was in the guest house, which was like 20 rooms or something. And she knew a Dr. Bob Smith, and she and Ann Smith had been going to the Oxford Group, and the Oxford Group came to Akron in about 1932. And one of the Firestone heir got sober through the Oxford Group. And he asked Thomas Edison's main guy to come, I think his name was Newman, to come to Akron and start an Oxford Group there. And so it started, and they had meetings, and Ann Smith and Henrietta went, and eventually Dr. Bob went. And he went for several years. He studied the Bible, he went to church, and he got drunk all the time. And his life was going to crap. And he was desperate, and he told them, he confessed about 3 or 4 weeks before this that he couldn't stop drinking, which they all knew. But he confessed it, and he said, "I so much want to." I think that was the expression he used. And Henrietta and his wife prayed for him, and they prayed that someone would come and help him. And so she got the call. She called Ann Smith. Bob, of course, was passed out in the foyer of their home. Mark's been there. It's a small home, but in those days it was, you know, anybody had a home in 1935 was wealthy, because the country was really poor. We don't realize how poor our country was coming out of the Depression. And he had bought her a plant, and so they said he was potted with the potted plant. That's what Joe and Charlie say. And so I didn't realize this, but Bill didn't have any money, and Henrietta made him dinner, and she said, "Are you going to be okay?" And he said, "It'll be okay, and he'll be back the next day." Now, when Bob woke up, he didn't really want to talk to anybody. Get that? He wasn't in the mood. But he said, even though he was dying, he would give this guy 15 minutes. And said, so it says, his call to the clergyman led him presently to a certain resident of the town who, though formerly able and respected, and Dr. Bob was a very bright man, went to Dartmouth College and had a good practice, but then alcohol took over. And he was nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. So there's alcoholic despair, and then the nadir is the low point. So what was the low point? Think about for yourself. And what does alcoholic despair look like? Well, he says it's the usual situation. Home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, standing damaged. A desperate desire to stop. He did have a desire to stop, but he had no way out. For he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape from what? Himself. And he had no way out of his situation, because he didn't understand that he had a spiritual malady and that he had to let go of himself and turn from himself to God. He didn't know that yet. And of course, he saw no way out, and I wrote, he had the wrong pair of glasses on. He had his self-centered glasses. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be an alcoholic. Well, how can this be? You know, here he's drunk all the time, he can't stop drinking, but he didn't understand. Fully realize means come into consciousness what it meant to be an alcoholic. And so you can ask yourself, what does it mean to be an alcoholic? And they spend 43 pages in the book, in Doctor's Opinion, telling you that, so you understand it. So he met Bill, his friend related his experience. So Bill described his alcoholism to Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob could hear the insanity of the first drink, the loss of control once you drank, the inability to see the truth right before you drank. And then he agreed that willpower could not stop drinking for long. Now, willpower worked for a while. Bill tried it. People tried in AA. They're gonna do it. It's their will. They're gonna not drink. And you can do it for a while. You can do it for a long time, but you'll still be miserable, because when does alcoholism occur? When you're sober. And Julie described it. When you're sober, separated from God, running the show, things don't go well. And how long can you run the show and things not going well before you'll seek the ease and comfort of alcohol or drugs or whatever? A spiritual experience, though, notice he conceded, was absolutely necessary. He conceded it. And a spiritual experience they talk about on page 25, and there's a solution. Then we have a whole chapter on it. But it's a whole change in our attitude and outlook upon life. And we can feel the nearness of our Creator. We can feel the central fact of our lives is that we have a relationship with our Creator, and He's doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. That's what it's all about. But the price seemed high. It seemed high. He's dying. Everything's a mess. But it still seems too high. Have you ever met anybody in AA and talked to them? This is great, but you know, do I have to go to 3 meetings a week? You know, I'm busy. You know, do I have to read this book and do these steps? Can't I do 1 step or a month or something? And it seemed high upon the basis suggested. And what was it high for him? He didn't want people to know he was an alcoholic. He had a big ego. He was a doctor. All right, laugh. Doctors have big egos. I dealt with them forever. And Grady's laughing. Mine's a little bit less than it was. It's getting there. Mark could tell you it's getting better, isn't it, Mark? It is. He does. He listens to me. But it seemed high. He didn't stop, Mark. He seemed high upon the basis suggested. See, he couldn't lose. He had his pride. He had a very high false pride to protect himself because he was very insecure. And what people thought of him really mattered. It was really important to him. And so he lived in fear and constant worry about those who might find out about his alcoholism. And he, of course, he had the familiar alcoholic obsession that few knew of his drinking. Why then should he lose the remainder of his business only to bring still more suffering to his family by, quote, foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? Well, you wouldn't want to tell your patients that you're drunk when you're operating on them. That would be a terrible thing, wouldn't it? And you see how silly it is? He would do anything he said but that. So he had put some limits on what he was willing to do. He wasn't willing to go to any length. The other thing about Dr. Bob, and from reading and listening to him and reading his story and listening, he has several talks on XA speakers. He couldn't forgive himself for being weak-willed and drinking. He thought he was just a terrible sinner because he couldn't stop drinking on his own. And what Bill explained to him was, Bob, you may be a sinner, but you don't have any power. On your own, you have no power not to drink. And that kind of helped him, because it took the burden that it wasn't that he was a bad person, he just had no power. And then he realized he had the wrong manager, him. And he would do anything he said but that. Being intrigued, however, he invited the friend, so Bill stayed with him for 2 weeks. And they read the scriptures, and they studied Book of James, and they had quiet time, and he thought he was doing really well. And then he thought he was getting control of his situation. In other words, he thought he was getting control of it. It's very dangerous. That's why when people celebrate birthdays, I ask them, how did you let God do it? Because once we start taking credit for things, then we're in trouble. Because I can't take credit for anything. It's all been God. And I've been so grateful when I look back. It says when we look back, the things that happened when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have imagined. And he went on a roaring bender. What he did was he went to the AMA convention. His wife told Bill not to let him go because he gets drunk every time. And Bill says, well, you can't lock him up. See, that's what, we can't protect people. Alcohol's everywhere. It loses attractiveness to us as we grow spiritually, right? It doesn't hold anything for us. But Dr. Bob wasn't there yet because he hadn't admitted complete defeat. He wasn't willing to go to any length, and he had the spree to end all sprees. And apparently, he made it to his nurse's house, and then it took him 3 days to kind of detox him, and then he had to go operate on somebody's rear end. Dr. Bob was a rear end specialist, so AA was started by AA was started. AA was started by Bill, who was a real fast talking kind of shyster, and Dr. Bob was a rear end doctor, and people have tried to find out whose rear end he operated on, but I don't know that anybody knows. Who cares? But he went into surgery, and so it said he saw that he would have to face his problems squarely, that God may give him mastery. So when he came back, he saw that he was going to have an honest, squarely, honest and open manner. He was to face his problems, his situation, and that God would give him mastery. Remember it says on page 45, God solves our problem. We have a dilemma, right? How we're going to live? We have no power to live. That's why it says we're going to talk about God. God removes the problem, not me. I just allow God to do it by not practicing my self-centeredness anymore and letting God's character dominate my life with God's power and help. So one morning he took the bull by horns, and this was after the surgery. He went to surgery and they gave him a beer. Bill gave him a beer to settle his nerves. And then he went in and operated. He did let them know. He called Lois and Ann and Bill and told him the operation went okay. But then they didn't see and hear from him, and they thought maybe the beer had started the phenomena of craving. But he actually went around and made amends, and to tell those he feared what his trouble had been. And why did he fear people? Because he'd harmed them. And remember, one of the key things about step four is to forgive everybody you hated, and then also to see how you may have harmed them, and you may need to make amends to them. That's the power of step four. It changes your whole attitude to all those people that you have resentment to. You forgive them, you see them as human beings who are just, they have their own personalities, and then you can see how you harm them. So, and I've said this a lot, I haven't said it for a while, that if anybody walks through the door, I wouldn't be afraid of them because I would be glad to see them so I could make amends. I really can't think of anybody I'm afraid to see. And that's good. Now, I may think of it before the meeting ends. If so, I'll let you know. But because I'd like to be able to make amends, but there are people I don't want to find. I might harm them more if I did that. He found himself surprisingly well received and learned that many knew of his drinking. What a shock. Because we're going to read later when he goes to the hospital to get a new client. He asked the nurse, do you have anybody here who's a hopeless alcoholic? She says, what about you? What about you, Bob? And they had a sense of humor. And stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people he had hurt. He trembled as he went about, for this might mean ruin, particularly to a person in his line of business. And I think I was nervous in the beginning, but then after a while, I didn't care if anybody knew I went to AA. I would see people at meetings who were relatives of patients I took care of. I've never had anybody tell me that they were upset that I went to AA. I've never seen that. AA is very well respected, and I don't care if anybody knows. Now, and I was a little nervous in the beginning, but I got over that. Cliff helped me a lot. He says, you're not that important. You know, we're just not that important. And nobody really, because they're all thinking of themselves. You know, somebody says, well, I'm afraid to go back to the meeting. Eric says, I can't, afraid to go back. I said, you're not that important. And they're all thinking of themselves anyway, right? It's alcoholics. And so, anyway, I thought that was funny. Nobody laughed. At midnight, he came home exhausted, but very happy, has not had a drink since. As we shall see, he now means a great deal to his community, and the major liabilities of 30 years of hard drinking have been repaired in four. And it's just powerful when you see that. And he died in 1951. He got pancreas cancer, and I think he was 65. So he sobered when he was about 50. But life was not easy for the two friends. Plenty of difficulties presented themselves. Well, of course, because I'm talking to somebody now who's down in Alabama. I've known them for quite some time, and there's a lot of crap that they're facing. And it's very, you forget, I don't know, when you've been sober a while, you forget how bad it was the first month, the first week, the first 2 weeks, first 3 weeks, 2 months, 3 months. I mean, there's a lot of crap that comes down on people. And how we deal with our fears and our shame and guilt and just life, because we don't have any tools. I didn't have a lot of tools when I first sobered up to deal with fear and resentment. And I had a lot of fear. Anybody else have a lot of fear when you first sobered up? And I was afraid of everything. But you know, it's worked out. It's amazing how it, but it takes, it's a journey. And I remember Janelle was in this room, and he said, you're not spiritually fit in the beginning. You have to work at it. It's like when you start exercising. You know, you're not going to run a marathon the first day you're in AA spiritually. You have to learn how to walk and then run and build up your endurance and your spiritual power. And that made a lot of sense to me. And they had a lot of difficulties. Think about the difficulties you had. But here's what they both saw, that they must keep spiritually active. See, these paragraphs really should be read a lot of meetings, because this is what the book is all, this is what AA is all about. It's not, you know, it's great to have a social fellowship, but it's about saving our lives and others. They must keep spiritually active. How do we keep spiritually active? We work step 10 and 11 every day, and we're working with others. And we participate in the fellowship, and especially a fellowship of the Spirit, where you're with people who are seeking God together. One day, they called up the head nurse of a local hospital. They explained their need and inquired if she had a first-class alcoholic prospect. Not just any alcoholic, but they wanted a first-class one. And then I'm just going to read, yes, we've got a corker. He's just beaten up a couple of nurses. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking, but he's a grand chap when he's sober, though he's been in here 8 times in the last 6 months. So this wasn't a guy who took the wrong turn on the highway and got a DUI because, you know, he should have taken 29th Street instead of gone on 435. You've heard that before, you know. That was a joke too, nobody. You know how the difference between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic in jail? The alcoholic in jail, the non-alcoholic says, I shouldn't have had that last 2 drinks and I shouldn't have driven. And the alcoholic says, I shouldn't have taken the interstate. You know, and that's the difference. You know, oh, if I had taken the interstate. And I understand he was once a well-known lawyer in town, but just now we've got him strapped down tight. And here was his prospect, all right, but by the description, none too promising. Isn't that all of us? The use of spiritual principles in such cases was not so well understood. Remember, this was no AA. This was the first 12-step call, really, as it is now. And they gave him a private room, and then he wanted to know how he got the private room. And I think we'll pick up with this next week, because there's so much in here about AA number 3 was Bill Dodson. And so we'll pick up on page 157 next week. And I don't think I'm going to review, but Mark's going to, actually it won't be next week because we're going to do it on Wednesday night. So we have Bill in the lobby. Bill, God directs him away to the church directory, to Dr. Bob, and we're here today. And that's the hand of God. And so we'll stop with that. It's great to see everybody, and should have plenty of things to talk about. This is great stuff. Thank you.